winced in pain as he pushed with both feet to move the bed. It gave about an inch, and the scraping on the other side became more frantic. Tim braced himself for the pain, pushed with every ounce of strength he could muster, and succeeded in moving the bed back up against the wall. It didn't connect with the solid thud he'd been expecting, but instead with a crunch and a screech. The screech kept on going. He'd caught at least part of the third rat with the bed, maybe a front paw or its nose.
"Oh," said Greeley. "You seem to have neutralized the third rat."
"He doesn't sound neutralized to me," Tim said over the screeching.
He was sitting on the floor, thankful for what he was sure would only be a brief opportunity to rest. He put his mind to work on what he should do next. His escape tunnel was looking like less of an option now.
"What's on the other side of that wall?"
he asked Greeley, pointing to the wall behind him.
"Another cell," said Greeley.
"That's it?" asked Tim. "Why didn't you tell me that before?"
"I tried to, but ye—"
"Fuck!" Tim cut him off. "I'm back at square one," he said to himself. "Except now I'm nearly dead, and I have two giant rat corpses for company."
He considered his current inventory. One broken bone, not entirely useless as a weapon. One bed, complete with lead brick. No immediate uses came to mind except for the one in which it was currently employed. Two giant rat corpses. Food? He supposed they'd have to do if it came to that. They must have some kind of nutritional value if they've been keeping Greeley going for so long. It was a shame that he couldn't give one to Greeley. He couldn't think of anyone who would be more excited by the gift of a big dead rat. He hadn't had any time to really form any sense of affection towards Greeley. In fact, if he had to make the choice right then, he probably would have judged him as an idiot and someone who he didn't like on the whole. But when you've got something you don't want, and there's someone else not 15 feet away from you who you know would really want it, well, that situation doesn't... An idea hit him. Rat bones. If he could get some of the longer, thinner bones out of one of these bastards, he'd be able to pick that lock with no problem. Tim grabbed the shorter shard of bone that he'd broken off from his makeshift weapon. He could probably use it to scrape some flesh away, dig down to some bone. Moving with only his hands, still in a sitting position, he made his way to the second rat. He poked at it with the longer part of the bone. It did not respond. He ran the bone sword through the hole in its neck through which he had killed it and tried to leverage the body forward a little.
"Maybe you should cut that guy loose,"
suggested Greeley. Tim hardly noticed the third rat's screams anymore. It was just part of the background noise to him.
"Listen to him. He's suffering, he is."
Tim leaned forward and then slammed his back as hard as he could into the bed. The rat gave a new shriek of pain and then maintained its former screaming.
"Fuck him," said Tim. "Did you see my foot? I might never walk right again."
Tim grabbed the rat next to him by the ear and shoved it forward as far as he could. This meant that his back was pushing hard into the bed, and the third rat once again voiced his objection. He managed to get the front paw exposed from the side of the bed and tried to cut away as close to the body as he could, but his bone weapons seemed less ideal for precision cutting than they had been with panicked stabbing. Once he removed the arm from the bulk of the body, he'd been able to whittle the flesh from the bone with greater care. Right now, he only seemed to be succeeding at mangling a corpse. With the help of his good leg and both arms, he finally ripped the leg off of the creature and fell backwards.
"Change of heart?"
asked Greeley.
"What are you talking about?"
"You're gonna eat that?"
"No, I'm not gonna fucking eat that," said Tim.
"Mind tossing it here, then?"
"No," said Tim. "Why would I go to all that bother to cut this thing's leg off just to toss it to you so you can eat it?"
"Dunno."
"I'm getting the fuck out of here. If I've got time, I might be able to get you out too. Or you can stay here and eat all the rats you like. Makes no difference to me."
"Well, whatever you're doing, you'd better get a move on it. Shorty should be making his rounds sometime soon."
Tim scraped furiously at the flesh of the rat's former forearm, trying to remove the skin without breaking the bones underneath. Digging down, he finally found the bones. He was able to remove one without breaking it, but the other one snapped. The bone he successfully recovered was slender, but strong. It would probably do. He would still need one more. He was getting the hang of flesh removal now, and he separated the bone of the rat's upper arm from the flesh around it without much effort. It was thicker, but not by much. It might do. He pulled himself up to his feet and hobbled over to the barred door, keeping as much of his weight as possible on his good leg. He put his ear to the lock and felt around the inside of it with the rat bones.
About 10 seconds later, he heard a click. He pushed. The door swung freely on its hinges.
"Well, I'll be damned," said Greeley. "Not a bad show, lad. Not at all."
Tim closed the door again. "Do you want to get out of here?" he asked Greeley.
"Yar,"
said Greeley.
"I think I'd like to see this guy again."
"Are you willing to fight? I mean, if it comes to that?"
"If we get caught outside of these cells," said Greeley, "you can be damn well certain it's gonna come to that. I'll fight. If you can kill 2 dire rats with naught but poor Gorp's leg, I'll manage to find something."
Tim opened the door as carefully and silently as he could, and then went to work on Greeley's door. "You really eat those things?"
"Nah," said Greeley. "Not those biggins. They can't get into me cage. I just eat the normal rats that come in every now and again when I can catch them. Shorty raises the biggins for himself. Takes away about 1 a week. I normally get a taste of it round the great harvest."
The lock clicked. Greeley pushed on the door. Tim pushed back. "Not yet."
"Why not?"
"You said Shorty's due to come around soon, right?"
"Yar,"
said Greeley.
"So it's probably best we get our arses a-moving, don't you think?"
"No," said Tim. "He's pretty small. If we catch him by surprise, we can take him out of the equation."
"You don't mean..."
"No," said Tim. "But we can at least lock him in one of these cells. We don't know what we're going to face out there, and we don't need any surprises from the rear."
"Well, aren't ye a smart little guy?"
"You know, that's really condescending."
"Sorry."
"Listen, when he comes in here, he's going to head immediately over here and ask me what the fuck's going on with all these giant rats. You're going to open your door and grab him from behind. I'll get out of the way, and you can keep on shoving him into here."
"Right."
Tim spent a full 5 minutes wondering if they'd made the right choice to wait in their cells before Shorty finally showed himself. He walked into the hallway with a concerned look on his face and nodded to Greeley. Greeley nodded back as if nothing was out of the ordinary. Shorty turned his attention to Tim's cell. His yellow eyes grew round and his jaw dropped open.
"My rats!" croaked the old goblin. "What have you done, boy?"
"Oh, I'm fine," said Tim. "Don't worry about me."
"Get back, you stupid, murdering halfwit!"
He raked his giant brass key across the bars of Tim's cell, and Tim instinctively stepped back from the noise.
"What the devil?"
said Shorty, as the cell door nudged back a bit. He looked up at Tim, who smiled and shrugged. The next thing Tim knew, the goblin was engulfed in something that looked like a hairy, broken box kite, and being pushed into his cell. Tim relieved him of his keys and picked up his bone sword from behind the rat where he had hidden it. Greeley stood up, and Tim pointed the blood-soaked broken bone down at the surprised-looking goblin. Shorty looked up at Greeley.
"What do you think you're doing, man?"
It wasn't said in anger or from any perceived position of authority. To Tim, it actually sounded like concern.
"It looks like I'm chicken out early," said Greeley.
"You'll never get past the guards outside," said Shorty.
"This here's a smart lad," said Greeley, gesturing to Tim. "I'm sure he's got a plan for that."
Shorty looked up at Tim. His face was a question mark.
I'm still working out the finer details," Tim lied.
Shorty started to get up. "Uh-uh," said Tim, brandishing his bone. Shorty scooted back, but remained sitting.
"Is that rat blood?"
he grimaced.
"Most of it," said Tim.
"I'll do as you say," said Shorty. "Just keep that away from me. Those things carry disease, you know."
Tim looked down at his foot.
"Yes, that thought had occurred to me."
He looked over at Greeley and jerked his head back towards the door. When Greeley was out of the cell, Tim backed out as well and locked the door behind him.
"Sorry about this, Shorty," said Greeley.
Shorty shrugged.
"I'd have done the same thing."
"So,"
Greeley addressed Tim,
"what's the plan?"
"What's that way?"
Tim asked, indicating the direction Shorty came from.
"Shorty's quarters, I expect. I don't get around much."
"Let's see if there's anything useful in there," Tim said, and led the way briskly.
"You got some pep back in your step, I see," said Greeley.
Tim stopped and looked down at his foot. It still looked pretty bad, but not as bad as it had looked a few moments ago.
"You know, you're right. I feel better. Not 100%, but there's a noticeable difference. I wonder..."
He bit his lower lip for a moment, and then shook the thought away.
We can think about that later. Let's keep going.
Greeley followed Tim to a small wooden door which stood ajar a little way down the hall. Firelight glowed inside. Tim nudged the door with his bone and revealed a cozy little room, complete with a bed, a rocking chair, a dresser, and a shelf full of books. On top of the dresser were a few items that Tim recognized immediately. His bow was there, as was his belt, with his dagger and rapier still sheathed in it. He walked in to grab it and was bombarded with absolute silence. The silence was so sudden and so complete that he assumed he'd just been struck unconscious and wondered how he was able to continue seeing. No more screaming rats. No more footsteps. No more of the general white noise that he never even knew was there until it was all gone. He turned around to look at Greeley. Greeley put his hands out, palms up, and mouthed the word, "What?" "I can't hear anything," Tim mouthed back, completely unnerved that there was no sound coming out of his mouth. Greeley's face scrunched up, and he cupped a hand over one ear. "What?" he mouthed again. Tim decided that this was just something he was going to have to figure out later. Time was too precious a commodity right now. He grabbed his stuff and walked back out. Upon crossing the threshold of the door, he got slammed in the ears with the sounds of screaming rats and a rush of white noise. He dropped his belongings and put his hands over his ears.
"Are ye all right, Mr. Tim?"
asked Greeley.
"Huh?"
said Tim. He slowly removed his hands from his ears.
"Yeah, just a headache. You know, it's completely silent in there."
"You don't say,"
said Greeley, and poked his head in. He prodded one ear with a finger and then removed and inspected it. Then he farted. Tim was at just the wrong height for that. Greeley pulled his head back out.
"Yar," he said. "Silent as the grave. How about that?"
"How is that possible?" asked Tim.
"I expected some sort of silent spell," proposed Greeley. "Makes sense for a jailer in a dungeon. You'd go mad listening to all those people screaming their heads off all the time."
Tim shrugged. That was good enough for him. He buckled his belt and slung his bow around his back. He led the way back past the cells, with Greeley following behind.
"Hey!" shouted Shorty. "Those are my things, you lousy thief!"
"I prefer the term rogue," said Tim. "Thief is so second edition."
"First you kill my rats, now you steal my things!"
Shorty turned his head. Tim thought he might actually have seen his red goblin eyes start to water.
30 years of service, and it's the first thing they ever gave to me."
"Why'd they give it to you?" asked Tim.
"They said it was too small for any of them to use."
"So you knew it all belonged to me."
"That's why I haven't been wearing it," explained Shorty. "I'd very much like to stroll up and down here like a proper jailer with some weapons strapped to my sides. But at the same time, I didn't want to rub it in your face. I was planning to wait until after you were dead."
"That's very thoughtful."
Shorty wiped his sleeve across his eyes and turned back to face them.
"Hey, listen," he said. "I've been thinking. Why don't you take me with you?"
Tim raised both eyebrows.
"Ha," he said. "Nice try, buddy. I don't think so."
"Come on now," pleaded Shorty. "I'm a prisoner in here, same as you."
"You've only been in there for a minute."
"I mean as a jailer. Do you think I get free reign of the castle? I haven't been through that door since they threw me in here."
He indicated the door up the steps, which the captain and his guard had exited through.
"Once they get wind of me letting you escape, I'm as good as dead."
Tim looked at Greeley. Greeley shrugged.
"He has been a loyal friend all these years."
"A loyal friend?" asked Tim. "He's been your jailer."
"But he's been pretty good about it, as jailers go. He's been the only consistent friend I've had to talk to for any significant length of time."
"I can't believe I'm considering this," said Tim. Shorty looked at Tim without trying to hide the tears he was willing to well up in his eyes.
"I've got sons out there somewhere," he said. "I'd like to see them again."
"Oh, for fuck's sake, all right."
He grabbed the key ring and inserted a key.
"I'm warning you, though. If you betray us, I will fucking end you on the spot. I'll put that before defending my own life, even. Do we understand each other?"
"Absolutely, sir."
"Just call me Tim."
He started walking to the door.
"Would you mind, Mr. Tim?"
asked Shorty as humbly as he could manage.
telling us the plan?
Greeley stood next to Shorty in solidarity. Tim's shoulders slumped down.
I don't actually have a plan. I figured we'd just do our best to be sneaky and try to find the quickest way out.
I beg your pardon, sir, said Shorty. But that doesn't sound like much of a plan.
Greeley nodded in agreement, but tried to look apologetic about it.
Well, what the fuck do you expect from me?
You had a pretty good plan to catch me, said Shorty. I know Greeley didn't come up with that.
Greeley nodded enthusiastically.
That's right. That was all him.
But there's only one of you, and you aren't any bigger than me, said Tim. And we outnumbered you 2-1. If they come back in here like they did when they brought me here, we'll be outnumbered, barely armed, tired, and underfed.
I've got some leftover rat in my room,
offered Shorty. No, thank you.
I'm not saying we ought to use the same trick twice, said Shorty. But running out there without any sort of plan amounts to the same as suicide.
Tim looked around.
Okay, I might have something.
See?
Said Shorty.
That wasn't so hard.
I didn't say it was something good, and it depends on a lot of contingencies.
What's a contingency?
Asked Greeley.
Shit that could go wrong.
Your plan depends on a lot of shit going wrong?
Asked Greeley.
I like them odds.
I have something for you, said Shorty, and ran off towards his room.
But don't you want... said Tim.
It's for your leg!
The goblin shouted back excitedly. Tim let him go. His leg felt better than before, but he really wouldn't mind having it sorted out completely if Shorty had something that could help. Shorty came back with a stoppered vial of a dirty brownish-yellow fluid.
Drink this!
Tim looked at the vial doubtfully, took it, and unstoppered it. His nose was immediately assaulted.
Blah! He said. This smells like piss!
Some of it is,
said Shorty.
I'm not drinking this.
It's a healing potion, said Shorty. It will heal your leg. There are more lives at stake than your own. Drink it.
Is urine really one of the components of a healing potion?
Not exactly. I have limited resources down here. Sometimes I just have to make do. Come on now. One gulp. Don't even think about it.
Tim held his nose and downed the potion. It burned its way down his throat like a shot of cheap whiskey. It exploded into his stomach like a fireball. His face held a wince that he dared not let go of. He was resisting the urge to vomit, not because he had any suspicion that this toxic waste was going to do his body any good, but rather because he knew his esophagus wasn't going to be able to handle a second pass. When the urge subsided, he allowed his face to relax enough to wheeze in a drawn-out lungful of air.
Oh, my God,
he said as soon as he was able to speak.
It's worse than piss.
He grabbed his right thigh with both hands as the sensation of burning hard liquor flowed from his stomach straight through to his leg. A tingling feeling, like the pins and needles one feels after the blood rushes back into a limb which had fallen asleep, coursed down the length of his leg. When the tingle reached the bite in his calf, the wound seared like it had been dunked in a vat of lemon juice, and Tim collapsed to the floor. Clutching his leg did him no good, and so he chose instead to writhe around on the floor, clenching his teeth and waiting in terrified anticipation for the effect to reach his foot. Greeley took a step toward him, but Shorty put up a hand to stop him.
You didn't,
started Greeley.
He'll be fine,
Shorty assured him.
Ah-ha-ha-ha-ha!
Tim screamed as the potion found his foot. He started pounding on the stone floor with his fists.
Grab his arm,
demanded Shorty, as he went to grab the other one. Greeley hesitated, so Shorty continued.
His healthy foot isn't going to do us any good if he smashes his hands up.
That made sense enough to Greeley, who grabbed Tim's arms as tight as he could. Neither Shorty nor Greeley was strong enough to keep Tim from flailing his arms any which way he liked, but they were providing enough resistance to keep him from hurting himself. Tim's foot felt like it was roasting in a fire for a few seconds longer, and then the sensation left him altogether. His body went limp. Shorty and Greeley relaxed their hold on him and watched his chest heave up and down as he lay panting on the floor. When he had enough breath in him to do so, he propped himself up on his elbows, raised his head, and looked down at his foot. It was still filthy with drying blood, but it was whole. He wiggled his toes. They seemed to be waving at him. He smiled at them. He wiped the sweat from his forehead and looked up at Shorty.
It worked,
said Tim, smiling.
Of course it worked,
said Shorty indignantly.
What kind of goblin do you take me for?
The kind that keeps an innocent man in prison, awaiting his execution, said Tim.
Shorty rolled his red eyes.
I suppose I'm never going to live that down, eh?
Tim hopped up to his feet. He kicked one leg out, and then switched to the other. He stomped the bare soles of his feet on the cold stone floor. Greeley cautiously interjected.
You said you had some kind of plan, did ye?
Chapter 8. Julian was still scratching multiplication tables into the dirt with a stick, which Cooper was still failing to comprehend at all, when Dave returned from his prayers.
Guys,
said Dave, approaching cautiously with his hands behind his back.
What's wrong?
Asked Cooper.
Did you heal your arm? Asked Julian.
Yeah,
said Dave tentatively.
Well done,
said Cooper.
How many healing spells did you use up?
It just took one.
Nice roll.
Thanks.
What's going on, Dave? Asked Julian. What's wrong?
I...
For fuck's sake,
said Cooper.
Spit it out.
Dave lowered his head and held out his right arm. For a moment, the three of them stood there in silence. Then Cooper broke into laughter. He laughed so hard that he started coughing. He horked up a big gob of phlegm, spit it on the ground, and laughed some more. Julian still didn't see what the problem was. And then it hit him.
Holy shit, he said, barely above a whisper. The leopard skin armband that Cooper had stretched over Dave's wounds wasn't an armband anymore. It was now a part of Dave's arm.
How did,
Julian said, what did...
He reached out to touch Dave's furry forearm.
Hey, said Dave, jerking his arm away. Knock it off.
What happened?
My best guess is that the healing magic didn't differentiate between my skin and the leopard skin. Like Cooper said, it's skin, ain't it?
How does it feel? Asked Julian.
Furry.
That's too fucking awesome,
said Cooper.
But you're okay? Asked Julian.
I guess so. How's Tim?
Cooper stopped laughing.
It's hard to tell. He was down quite a few hit points about half an hour ago.
You think the guards roughed him up again?
No. He lost real hit points this time.
A look of panic overtook Dave's face. Cooper raised a hand to calm him.
Don't worry. Whatever happened, he came through in the end. Little fucker leveled up.
Seriously?
Dave grinned.
Yeah,
said Cooper.
I figure he had a scrap with one of the other guys in the prison yard or something.
Prison yard? Said Dave. Did you see the size of that town? I don't think he's in San Quentin.
Whatever,
said Cooper.
Hey, guys, said Julian excitedly.
Dave and Cooper turned around to look at him. He was holding a character sheet.
Tim's back up a full 15 hit points.
What the hell is he doing in there?
Asked Dave.
Maybe a cellmate is a cleric,
offered Cooper,
and Tim's been doing him favors.
In case anyone missed the implication, he rolled his fingers into a tube and made an in-and-out gesture near his mouth. Dave and Julian looked at him disapprovingly.
We better get going, said Dave. It's still early enough so that there shouldn't be too much traffic on the road. We might get lucky and find an isolated wagon. Is everybody still cool with that plan?
It's the only reasonable one that's been proposed, said Julian.
They both looked at Cooper.
I'm still convinced there's a solid strategy to be made involving burning the shit out of the town. But as I currently lack the mental resources to formulate such a plan, I will accept yours as a lesser alternative.
That's very big of you, said Dave.
Julian let out a loud whistle and shouted,
Ravenous!
Oh,
moaned Cooper.
Don't call that thing back here.
I'm going to send him out to scout for a good target.
Cooper grimaced, but Dave nodded approvingly.
Good idea, he said.
After only a few seconds, Ravenous flapped through the trees and onto Julian's shoulder.
You called, sir?
Julian removed the bird from his shoulder and set him down on a low-hanging branch of a nearby tree.
Anything to report?
There's a troll about 100 yards that way.
He jerked his head to the side to indicate a direction deeper into the forest.
Shouldn't be much bother to you guys if you don't go near him. He's eating a deer.
What's your new friend saying?
asked Cooper in a mocking tone.
There's a troll 100 yards that way, eating a deer.
I wish we'd encountered the deer rather than the leopard, said Dave.
At least we didn't encounter the troll,
said Cooper. Maybe we should, said Julian.
Why would we want to do that?
Asked Cooper.
A troll would rip us to pieces.
What if we took it by surprise? Pressed Julian. We could probably all be better off at level 2 when we try to rescue Tim. It's just one little troll against the 3 of us.
Cooper looked at Julian with a puzzled expression.
What exactly do you think a troll is?
I don't know, Julian admitted. I mean, I guess it's not like one of those toys you put on the back of your pencil. You know, the ones with the crazy colorful hair.
Yeah,
said Cooper.
I know the ones. And yeah, they aren't anything like that.
What about the one in 3 Billy Goats Gruff?
The one that got killed by a goat?
That's the one.
No,
said Cooper.
The thing over there would have nothing to fear from a goat.
But if...
Not even a really big one.
Oh.
It's bigger than any of us. It could rip us limb from fucking limb, and it will regenerate hit points faster than we can dish them out.
It must have some kind of weakness, said Julian.
Fire,
said Cooper.
Maybe electricity, but I don't remember. Listen, I'll be happy to discuss all the reasons why we should leave here right now while we are leaving.
Fine, said Julian. He returned to his familiar. Ravenous, see if you can spot a good target for ambush on the road.
Said
Ravenous, lowering his head. Julian sensed the moral quandary in his friend's voice.
We're not going to hurt anyone, he said. We just need a means of transportation through the city gates without being seen.
Ravenous's beady black eyes lit up.
Ah!
He said with an air of relief.
In that case, I'll get right on it.
Should we leave our camp set up here? Julian asked Cooper.
Not if you want to keep any of it,
said Cooper, already taking down his poor excuse for a shelter.
If there are trolls around here, they'll rip all this to pieces.
As they were finishing up the last of their packing, Ravenous flew down into the camp.
I've spotted a worthy target, Master Julian, but you'll have to hurry. He's coming just up the bend now.
Ravenous says there's a wagon coming, but we'll have to hurry to catch it.
Sure he does,
said Cooper.
What if it's true? Asked Julian. Will you believe me if there really is a wagon out there?
Dave laughed.
That's supposed to be proof enough for us to believe your stupid bird can talk to you? He successfully predicted that we would find a wagon traveling on a road.
Screw you guys, Julian said, and then stomped off after Ravenous.
When are you going to tell him that you believe him?
Dave asked Cooper.
Give us some time,
Cooper said.
This is more fun.
Why can't we understand him?
Dunno. Maybe only a wizard can understand his familiar.
I can totally hear you guys,
Julian called back at them.
Shit, said Dave.
Goddamn elf ears,
said Cooper. Ravenous led the party to a part of the forest that nearly reached the road. A small four-wheeled cart trudged up the road toward Algor, led by a mule. Whatever cargo it carried was concealed by a dirty, ragged cloth. The driver was a stout man wearing a sombrero. He stared blankly at the road ahead, letting puffs of white smoke trail behind him, like the world's smallest steam engine.
Check it out,
Cooper whispered from his hiding place, crouched behind a tree.
He's smoking.
So what?
Asked Dave.
So that means the cigarettes are available somewhere around here.
Oh, right.
Julian scratched his head.
He doesn't look too worried about the fact that he's traveling alone.
So?
Asked Dave again.
So why is that? Is it because he's so much of a badass that he's confident that he can handle any threat that comes his way?
Good point, said Dave. He doesn't look like much of a badass.
Fuck it,
said Cooper.
I'll go ask him.
He jumped up out of his hiding place, roared a battle roar, and brandished his great axe above his head.
Shit,
said Dave. He and Julian looked at one another, shrugged, and ran out after Cooper, roaring significantly weaker battle cries.
Holy fucking shit,
said the cart's driver. He fumbled around in his belt until he found a small bag. He hurriedly tossed it at Cooper, hitting him in the face. Cooper screamed. His eyes boiled with fury as he swung his axe around his head, preparing to bring it down and add another head to his collection.
Cooper, stop!
Julian and Dave were both shouting.
Huh?
Said Cooper. He lowered his axe. The driver swallowed hard.
What were you thinking? We aren't supposed to kill the driver.
He attacked me.
Dave picked up the bag that had hit Cooper in the face. Inside, he found about 3 dozen copper coins.
He attacked you?
Why don't I throw a sack of coins at your face and see if it hurts?
Don't be such a baby.
Fuck you.
Dave looked at Julian and jerked his head back towards the driver.
You're on, dude.
The driver was petrified with fear, but still looked happy to be alive. He continued to stare in terror when Julian flashed a smile at him.
We're really very sorry, said Julian.
He took the money pouch out of Dave's hand and held it up to the driver.
I think you dropped this.
Slowly, he reached out his hand to accept what was being handed to him.
If you don't want my money,
he said shakily,
and you don't want to kill me, then why do you attack me?
Julian held up an arm, and Ravenous flew down to rest on it. The driver looked mildly impressed. More importantly, he looked a little calmer. Julian was finding he really had a knack for this diplomacy thing.
It's neither you nor your money we're after, he said. We need to borrow your cart.
Why do you need to borrow my cart?
Asked the driver. His voice was steady and curious.
It is a piece of shit.
What is the cargo that you seek to bring into Algor?
More shit,
said the driver simply.
I'm sorry?
See for yourself.
The driver pulled back the cloth and revealed the cart to be full of manure right up to the top. Dave, Cooper, and Julian looked back and forth at one another, each waiting for the others to come up with a reasonable alternative to burying themselves in shit. Julian spoke first.
You'll probably want to grab some of that bamboo,
he said, pointing over to a patch of bamboo growing nearby.
If you want to breathe.
Dave looked from Julian to Cooper.
You can't really expect us to.
Tim's in trouble,
Cooper said.
Wherever they've got him locked up, he's having to fight. He's made it up till now, but who knows how much of that was blind luck. He won't hold out forever in there.
He trudged over to the bamboo patch and tore off 3 straws, each about 1 foot in length.
What's your name? Julian asked the driver.
Miguel?
What do you say, Miguel? If you want your cart back when we're done, you're welcome to come along.
If it's all the same to you, good people, said Miguel, I think I'll just catch up with you on foot. Algor is not a big place. I'm sure I'll find my cart.
No way,
growled Cooper.
The little guy comes with us. We can't have him alerting the authorities to our presence before we're ready to make our move.
That's right, said Dave. Anyway, my misery could use a little more company.
Miguel looked to Julian for a way out. Said Julian,
maybe I should wear your hat and what's that thing called?
It's a serape.
And your serape until this is done. It'll be nice to have something clean to wear.
Thank you, sir,
said Miguel, handing over the hat and serape. Dave nudged Cooper and whispered,
did that guy just thank Julian for stealing his clothes and making him bury himself in shit?
Cooper shrugged.
Good diplomacy check.
What do you think?
Asked Julian, after donning the hat and serape. He held his hands out as if he had a pistol in each one.
Not bad, said Dave.
It's a good look for you,
said Cooper.
How much do you want for this? Julian asked Miguel.
I'm sorry?
I like how this looks on me. Julian explained. I'd like to buy it from you.
You want to buy my clothes?
That's right. Name your price.
1 piece of silver would be sufficient, said Miguel.
Fuck that, said Julian.
I humbly beg your pardon, sir. I didn't mean...
How much money do we have?
Julian asked Dave, who was holding the party's money. Dave looked into the money pouch.
About 6 gold pieces. We've got some silver, too. Give this guy a gold piece. He's really being a good sport about all this.
Dave looked at Cooper. Cooper shrugged.
It's CNC,
he said.
How hard is gold to come by?
Dave flicked a gold coin to Julian, who flicked it to Miguel. Miguel caught the coin with both of his hands and looked at it. His eyes went wide and a little bit watery.
May the gods smile down upon you, sir, he said, attempting to remove his hat, and then remembering he was no longer wearing one. This will feed my family for a...
Don't sweat it, dude, said Julian. Do you know where the prison is in there?
Prison?
Jail, correctional facility, a penitentiary, a place where they put the bad people?
Dungeon?
Sure.
There's a small dungeon under the Lord's mansion, said Miguel.
Hey, guys, said Julian. I think I'm going to have Miguel ride up here with me. He seems to know his way around.
Cooper just snorted his disapproval. Dave spoke his.
I don't think that's a good...
If it's all the same to you, sir, Miguel spoke up, I think I'll ride in the shit.
Julian gave him a dejected look.
I don't know what you've got planned, explained Miguel, and I don't want to know, but after all is said and done, I like to ride away with my mule and cart full of shit without anyone knowing that I was a part of it.
Julian shrugged.
That's fair enough.
He would have really liked to have had someone up there with him when he spoke to the guards at the gate, though. In truth, he kind of envied his friends who would be hiding safely in a cart, buried in shit. Cooper passed out the lengths of bamboo and was the first to climb into the cart. The manure was dry and crumbly on top, but grew wetter, squishier, and warmer the further in he burrowed.
Not so bad once you're in,
he said, grinning. He put his own bamboo straw into his mouth, closed his eyes, and ducked his head under.
Not so bad for him, said Dave. He's used to smelling like shit.
He turned to Miguel.
After you.
Miguel shrugged. He tucked his gold coin into a pocket, put the bamboo in his mouth, and burrowed in next to Cooper. Dave looked at Julian.
Good luck, dude. This should be a piece of piss for you. If you run into any trouble, just pull our straws.
He buried himself on the other side of Miguel. Julian climbed up to the head of the cart and covered the contents as best he could, leaving a little room on his end for the three straws to poke out. Ravenous perched on the edge of the cart next to him. He tugged on the reins.
Go mule, he said.
The mule didn't move. He turned to Ravenous.
I don't suppose you know anything about mules, do you?
Ravenous shook his head and raised his wings in a shrug.
You mind going in and giving him a peck on the ass?
Not at all,
said Ravenous, and flew down to land on the mule. The mule made an ineffective swipe at him with his tail, and Ravenous turned around and looked up at Julian. Julian nodded. Ravenous bent over and pecked the mule as hard as his beak would peck. The mule let out a whinny and started to walk. It was a 20-minute trek back to the town gates. Julian could make out one guard leaning against the wall as he approached.
Well, he said out of the corner of his mouth to Ravenous, here goes.
I have every confidence in you, sir.
The mule clopped along steadily to the entrance.
Good morning, said Julian enthusiastically.
The guard, who had barely bothered to glance to him up till now, offered back a narrow-eyed sneer as if to say that this morning was anything but good from his point of view. From the look of his bloodshot eyes, the previous night had been much better, at this morning's expense. The mule continued through the gate to no one's objection, which was for the best, as Julian wasn't sure how to make it stop. The town looked much smaller from the inside, and Julian could see all of it. If there was anything that was going to pass for a lord's mansion, it was the building directly in front of him. To his right were a saloon, a general store, a blacksmith's shop, and a stable. To his left were a cluster of buildings which were not immediately identifiable. Julian guessed that they had arrived during the window of time in the day, not far after all the previous night's drinking had been done, but just before the current day's drinking had begun. The streets were empty, except for one guard standing outside of what Julian had guessed to be the lord's mansion. He steered the cart around the side of the saloon and then behind it, hoping that this was not a conspicuous place to steer a cart full of shit, or, failing that, that the guard idly watching him was too hungover to give a damn. Having made it behind the saloon, out of sight as far as he could tell from any eyes, he steered the mule directly toward the back of the building, trusting it to have the presence of mind to stop before ramming the wall with its head. He plucked out the bamboo straws. Six arms floundered up through the surface of shit like a stop-motion film of plants sprouting out of the earth. They each dug frantically at their own faces. Cooper reached his face first and sucked in a breath of air. His subsequent exhalation carried the words,
"You fucking asshole!"
toward Julian. He stood up, grabbed one of Miguel's arms, lifted him out, and set him down on the ground. Then he grabbed both of Dave's arms and pulled him upright.
You could have just knocked on the side or something.
Sorry, said Julian. I wanted to see what your reaction time would have been in a real emergency. Not very impressive, really.
Dave tumbled over the side of the cart and hit the ground hard. He lay on the ground panting. Miguel picked bits of shit off of himself and threw them back into the cart. Cooper spent a couple of seconds getting his breathing under control.
Anyway, good job getting us through.
Thanks, said Julian, a little uneasily. I feel different somehow. I don't know, it's hard to explain.
Dave sat up and caught his breath.
You're probably just relieved at having made it through a difficult and potentially dangerous situation. Give your heart a minute to calm down. You'll be all right.
No, said Julian. It's not that. This doesn't feel like when Melissa missed her period for a month. This is something else. It's a good feeling, I think.
Holy shit,
said Cooper.
I think I know what it is. Take a look at your character sheet.
Julian pulled the tube out of his bag and unrolled his sheet. He raised his eyebrows and looked at Dave and Cooper.
1,000 points on the nose.
So what are you now? Asked Dave. A second level wizard, or did you take a level in sorcerer?
Julian looked at the other side of his sheet.
Level one wizard, level one sorcerer, he said.
Sweet,
said Cooper.
I don't think you're going to regret that.
So I've got some more spells now, right? I can actually be of some use when we go in there?
Nah,
said Cooper.
You'll still be useless today. You've still got to study your spells for an hour.
Study them from what? Asked Julian. You said sorcerers don't use a book.
I don't know,
said Cooper.
Study them from your head or whatever.
Actually, said Dave, I played a sorcerer last summer. He only needs to spend 15 minutes concentrating on his spells.
Oh, yeah?
Asked Cooper.
We could probably put off this rescue another 15 minutes. Start concentrating.
On what?
I don't know. Look at your character sheet. What spells do you have?
In my spell book?
No,
said Cooper.
Those are wizard spells. Look for a list of sorcerer spells.
Okay, said Julian. I found it, but it's blank.
Holding the page in his hand, his thumb slipped, and he realized he was holding two sheets of paper. The second one had two lists of spells on it. One list was labeled zero level, and the other was labeled first level.
Hey, look at this, said Julian without looking up. It looks like I get to choose what I want. What do you think I should?
Looking up, he saw that everything around him was still. Cooper was staring at him, but at the same time not staring at him at all. It was more like he was staring through him. He got up to move, but Cooper's eyes didn't follow him. He looked over at Dave, who was frozen in conversation with Miguel. Even Ravenous was frozen in midair chasing after a dragonfly. Leaves hung in the air in mid-fall from their trees. Julian reached out to touch a single white fluff of dandelion. It was solid and immovable. Miguel's mule turned its head toward him.
Not this time, buddy, it said. You choose your own spells.
Mordred, Julian said accusingly.
That's right.
Why are you talking to this mule? Why not the head?
It's stuck in Cooper's bag. This is way easier.
So what do I have to do now?
Choose your spells, said the mule. You get 4 zero-level spells and 2 first-level spells. Choose wisely.
Julian looked at the zero-level spell list.
Most of these zero-level spells seem to suck.
That's why they're zero-level spells. If you use your imagination, some of them can be quite useful.
Is Detect Magic a good spell?
Maybe.
It's good enough. I'll take it. What about Read Magic?
You already know that one by heart because of your wizard level.
This is so fucking confusing. Light looks useful. I'll take that.
Okay, said the mule. 2 more.
Ooh, said Julian. Mage Hand looks cool. That's like telekinesis, isn't it?
A very limited form, yes.
I could see that being useful in a number of different circumstances.
Now you're getting the hang of it.
I should take one offensive spell. It's a choice between Acid Splash, Ray of Frost, and Disrupt Undead.
He read the descriptions of all 3.
The first 2 are weaker, but the 3rd is limited in its potential targets.
A conundrum, said the mule.
I'll take Disrupt Undead. I'll grab some more badass all-purpose spells later on.
Okay, said the mule. That's zero level taken care of.
What would you like for your two first-level spells?
I want that magic missile spell again.
Are you sure? You've already got it as a wizard.
But I can only cast it once per day, right?
That's right.
That sucks.
Yes, said the mule. I suppose it does. Okay, magic missile it is then. What would you like for the other one?
Jillian looked over the list.
We'll probably need to make a speedy exit. The spell mount, it summons a horse, right?
That's right.
If I used it more than once, could I summon horses for my friends?
The description of the spell says the horse serves you.
It would serve me well by carrying my friends.
A reasonable argument. Sure.
Then I'm done.
Time started up again. Leaves completed their journeys to the ground. Ravenous caught the dragonfly and perched on a post. The dandelion fluff blew away on the breeze.
What the fuck?
Said Cooper.
Julian?
Oh, hey, said Julian. Sorry, I'm over here.
Did you just cast a blink spell?
No, said Julian. I didn't see it on the list.
That's because it's a third level spell,
said Cooper.
What just happened?
Mordred happened, said Julian. He stopped time so you guys couldn't help me choose my spells.
What an asshole,
said Cooper.
So what did you choose?
Julian showed him the list.
Mount? As in, what I did your mom last night?
It summons a horse, said Julian. I thought it might come in handy if we find Tim and need to get our asses out of here in a hurry. I can summon four horses if I don't use any of their first-level spells.
Hmm,
said Cooper.
Good thinking. That might come in handy after all.
Chapter 9. Mordred sat alone at a table in the dining area of the chicken hut, sucking the last bit of meat off of a chicken wing bone. He tossed the bone onto a pile of its peers, licked his fingers, and wiped them on his jeans. He was slurping down the remaining contents of a Coca-Cola can when the front door bells jingled. He covered his mouth with his hands to avoid spraying Coke all over the books and dice. What soda he didn't choke on exploded into his hands and ran down his beard and t-shirt.
Oh, shit,
he said between chokes.
Sorry, said Catherine. Didn't mean to disrupt your little nerd party. I forgot my... Hey, where is everybody?
Mordred doubled over, trying to hack the Coke out of his lungs.
He stammered. Went out for more beer.
That sounded reasonable enough.
All of them?
Well, you know how boys are.
He wiped sweat, Coke, and chicken grease from his beard with the back of his hand. Catherine narrowed her eyes at Mordred for a moment and then broke off the stare and walked back into the kitchen. It will all be over soon. She's a pretty girl on a Friday night. She's got no reason to suspect that anything is wrong with her. A Super Mario Brothers ringtone rang out from the player's table.
Shit.
Mordred clutched his dice bag.
Time to talk, stuffed crust,
said Catherine, stomping back in from the kitchen. She pressed a button on her phone and the ringing stopped.
Where the hell is my brother?
I told you,
Mordred tugged at his beard.
They all went out for more beer.
The shops around here are all closed, said Catherine. The pitch of her voice was rising. She was beginning to panic. There are three full cases of beer in the walk-in freezer. Don't bullshit me, fat boy. You tell me where my brother is, or I'll call the cops.
Mordred fumbled with the drawstring of his pouch.
Look, I'm sorry.
His mind raced to find words as he spoke them.
Your brother and his friends told me they were going out for beer. It was just a few minutes ago.
He grabbed a black dye from the bag.
It's likely that they're just playing a trick on me. I'm sure they'll be back any second now.
He wouldn't have gone out without his phone, said Catherine. Her voice trembled slightly. Look, she pointed at the player's table. Cooper, Dave, and that other guy, they just decided to leave their phones behind as well?
I assure you, they'll be back in just a minute. Why don't you join us?
He tossed the black dye in Catherine's direction. Catherine snatched the dye out of the air and let out an exasperated shriek.
What the fuck is wrong with you? She raised a hand threateningly. I'm going to tear your fat, hairy throat out.
Each of her fingers ended in long, painted nails that lent credence to her threat. She threw the die, missing his face only by an inch or two,
It bounced off a wall. She lunged at Mordred. The die bounced off a table just before hitting the floor. Mordred raised his forearms to protect his neck, but Catherine vanished just before she could take some of his skin with her. Mordred exhaled.
Great, he muttered. Now I'll have to roll up a character for her.
He bent over to pick up the die, and the front door's bell jingled again. His heart nearly exploded.
Take it easy, princess,
said a man who must have outweighed Mordred by a good 20 pounds, but without an ounce of fat. The fluorescent light shone off the top of his shaved head like it was made from metal. His black t-shirt didn't necessarily look like it had been painted on, but rather that it might have fit snugly when he started wearing it at the age of 12, well before he had started working out. It looked less like something he wore to cover his torso, and more like something he wore to contain all of the boulders of which it was composed. Massive tattooed biceps ballooned out of the sleeves, leading down to forearms as thick as tree trunks, and then down to hands ending in fingers that looked like sausages carved out of wood.
Hey, faggot! Up here!
Mordred suddenly realized his eyes were scanning down the length of a man's body, jerked his head up to meet a pair of eyes that seemed to have been chiseled from chunks of ice. He said weakly.
Where's Cat?
Said the giant.
I thought I heard somebody shouting.
Mordred said again.
Hey, dipshit, speak up.
Here, said Mordred, and tossed the black die to the animated pile of muscles in front of him. Hold this.
What the fuck?
He responded, catching the die. He held it up to his face, and his expression changed from contempt to happy recognition.
Oh, sweet,
he said, following a swiftly retreating Mordred back to the gaming table.
You guys playing C&C?
He asked excitedly.
Fucking A,
he said when he saw the setup on the table. He tossed the die down onto the table.
I used to play this shit when I was...
Mordred rushed to the front door of the shop and locked it. He took in a deep breath, and the word shit escaped with his exhalation. Chapter 10.
We'd better get some sleep, said Tim.
But it's still early afternoon,
Shorty protested.
Do you know what time they're going to come get me in the morning?
No.
Well, then we have two choices, said Tim. We can stay up all night, or we can get whatever sleep we can get now and be ready for them when they get here.
Greeley interjected. If you meant for us to go to sleep, then why did you make us put those dead rats in our beds?
One less thing to do when we wake up, said Tim. It's not like that bed is really all that more comfortable than the floor, is it?
A man likes to sleep in his own bed.
Don't be such a baby, said Tim. If things go our way in the morning, you'll be kissing that bed goodbye for good.
The same likely holds true if things don't go our way, said Shorty glumly.
Good point. Now go to sleep.
Tim had no trouble getting to sleep. The screeching of the rat, with part of its body stuck between the lead weight and the stone wall, had become nothing but background noise to him. After what they'd done to him, the sound of one of them in agony soothed him like a lullaby. He wouldn't have said that he trusted Greeley or Shorty, but he wasn't going to let that stop him from getting his rest. If they were going to kill him, so be it. He would have to put his faith in them for now. The alternative was staying up through the night and trying to outwit and outrun his captors without having had any sleep. Greeley and Shorty shared Greeley's cell. Shorty had a nice, comfortable bed that they both might have slept in, but Tim insisted that nobody enter Shorty's magically soundproof room in case there was some sort of emergency in the night. As far as Tim could tell when he woke up, the afternoon, evening, and early part of the night